The ears are like...
They're just fine, thank you.
Okay. So basically, Steve's got the introduction. He cut the guts out of everything, as he usually does. And we're going to ask you about being an artist. So, I mean, just like the art, you know, industry in general. But I just got off a call with a guy named Eddie. Oh, my God, I forgot his last name. Something. He's a photo painter.
Arroyo?
Eddie, what? Arroyo? No, Eddie. Oh, my God, it went right out of my head. I just saw him. Anyway, Eddie's showing at the Nancy Hoffman Gallery, which is a big deal. He's been showing with her for years. And he said that he's embarrassed when he goes down and he sees his paintings. He can't go to the gallery. He stays away. It just embarrasses him. He sees nothing but mistakes and wants to run out.
There's a lot of actors who won't watch their movies, so
yeah.
I guess it's
okay. So we're gonna do this kind of stuff.
I should point out I have trouble watching our podcast for the exact same reason. So
I have a podcast, and I hate listening to myself. So it's
very painful for me too. So I get it.
There you go.
especially my voice. That's like
her voice. This is her new voice. Her old voice was much higher. This new voice much lower. So you can't even imagine what it used to be like.
My voice has changed. I've lost my New York accent.
Oh, yeah. She sounds like she's from London now.
Yeah. You're going to pull a Madonna and do a British
Oh, yeah. She's going to be Madonna. She's going to be talking with a British accent now.
Wait a second. So what was I going to ask? I don't remember. Okay. I lost my mind also.
Well, I think there's a part of everybody that hates hearing and listening to themselves.
Yeah, right.
As a painter, I don't know. I'm always surrounded by my stuff. Either it's in my studio or my parents' house. So it's kind of, I couldn't have that. I have to be around them. So it's a different feeling.
All right, okay. Steve, don't forget our sponsor.
I'll tell Alex. First of all, Alex, how do you pronounce your last name? Nunez. Okay.
Why don't you have David introduce her? David Nieves, could I introduce Alex
Ron,
Nunez?
If you marry David, you'd be Alex Nunez Nieves. Oh my God.
No, I'm an artist. I would keep my last name.
Thank God. I could never introduce you to anybody. Names, I'd be like,
this should really be on the thing.
Wait, aren't you recording it? It says recording on my screen.
Oh.
You can always convert it.
He did start it. Yeah. David, I want this part of it. Now you can, even though we started, Steve, just introduce.
Okay, well, I can do that for sure. So everybody, welcome to another edition of Lying on the Beach on Camera, LOBOC. And I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman Hess.
And our engineer is
David Nieves.
And our extra special guest is right over there, and her name is Alex Nunez. Is that pronounced right?
Yes, you got it.
Thank you very much. The pressure's off now after that. Anyway, Alex, before we go further to talk about Alex, I just want to point out that we could only do Lying on the Beach because of our sponsor, Handle Stick, and I'll have more about that coming up in just a little bit. But let's get back to the action here. And Alex is the program manager at the Fountainhead Residency. She also hosts a competing podcast, called Sunday Painter at sundaypainter.net. And most known for her pop culture compositions and her large-scale, incredible paintings filled with exposition and color and texture and sheen. And they're absolutely beautiful to look at. And I know at some point David's going to put some of them up on the screen here for everybody to see. But let me first say, welcome, Alex. Thank you for joining us and lying on the beach with us. We appreciate it. And my first question has to be, you know, we see art, we appreciate art, but we never think about the life of the artist. And I mean, I don't know. Is the life of the artist tough? Is it struggling? Is it better than I think it is? Tell us a little bit about what's it like to be an artist.
Well, quarantine's given you a direct window into the life of an artist. It's an incredibly solitary situation that you're constantly self-reflecting and experimenting, like a lot of people are now with, I don't know, I see people sewing and baking and making bread and all this other stuff. So it's it's kind of a strange life because you have to wear every hat now with social media. You have to learn how to, as I did, learn how to edit a radio show, also take pictures of your work and promote yourself, kind of be your own agent. There is no one answer. I kind of compare it to, if you ever seen Beetlejuice, that room we're in, the waiting room for hell, it's like, this is his hell and this is your hell. So right. That's exactly what it's like to be an artist, sitting in that room. But it's not all down. I'm just saying it's different for everybody.
And because it's like the being like we're in right now, that means no showering and you can wear the same clothes all the time. So right away, I see some advantages right there.
I shower. I work with a lot of glitter, so I have to shower or else it'd be like a safety hazard.
And just like you mentioned, Lois has learned to bake bread and so many other things during this time that we've been in quarantine. But that's I think amazing. Is it difficult to get noticed though? I mean, it seems like, you know, there are a lot of other artists out there. It's a noisy world we live in. How do you say, hey, me, I'm over here? How do you get attention?
I think the biggest thing is to be within a community. I'm at Fountainhead Studios and automatically that exposes me to 20 people. If I walk into the door of my studio, I can cross paths with at least one artist. I was a member of Art Table, which is a organization of women in the arts. I work with Fountainhead Residency, which is a revolving door of 3 to 4 artists a month. Attending an MFA program at Hunter College, I still talk to everybody that I went to school with in 2008. So, between my CV and just attending different cultural and social events around everywhere I live, it's inevitable that the community is just like electric.
Alex, when you said a CD, what do you
CV,
mean?
CV, like it's like your resume, like all
that
the
I know. I thought you said CD. Tell us what your podcast is about, because a lot of people that know you don't understand because it's music.
It's a little bit of both. So the podcast has been running 4.5 years now. I began it in Brooklyn, and then we moved to Miami. When I moved to Miami about 2 years ago, and I freelanced DJed in grad school, so I've always had a connection with music. And when I would go around to other studios at Hunter, I would always collect all this music that other artists were listening to, and I found that fascinating because I liked their work, and I always like seeing a backstory to a painting. So it's really something when you have a soundtrack of what someone's been working on. So I kind of wanted to take that, and then we would do an hour program combining an artist interviewed spliced into a playlist of that artist choosing. So you kind of not only got the normal banter about what they're working on, but what they're listening to and what other artists are inspiring the work as it's happening. And I think that that's really important to have, I don't know, a lot of times people kind of think of an artist as like a thing of the past. We look at the bio, to have a documented like biography of what real life influences, it's totally relevant because there's so many like cross networks that are happening every interview that I do.
How often does your podcast air?
We are once a month, every second Tuesday of the month at 8
p.m. That's why it's called Sunday Painter.
Well, originally I was once a week every Sunday night when I was in Brooklyn. I did that for 3 years. And I don't know if I realized what a commitment that was to get my ass down to Bushwick on a Sunday night or to ask anybody to come that often. So it became a lot. And then, so I started adding on playlists so other people can listen to those and they would just be music only episodes. But now we're only once a month.
Once a month on a Tuesday night.
Yes.
But how do we know which Tuesday night?
It's every second Tuesday of the month. But if people can't get that, they can always follow us on Instagram. We have SoundCloud and MixCloud archives of every artist. Over 70 artists are on there.
Wow.
So I think it's important for our viewers to see some of your art. David has some on his desktop that he can share with our viewers, and you can give us a little color commentary on what we're looking at. So let's see if we can make this happen.
I'm curious to which ones they chose.
Well, I think this one was right away. So that's obviously you're in there, correct? That's you?
I clearly can't have the same problem your artist friend had, Lois, because I have to look at myself and my work.
Yes.
So it's kind of a problem. So yes, this is a piece that I did this last October for Hispanic Heritage Month. Samsung, I did a brand collaboration with them, and this was in Times Square, in the Freedom Tower and Penn Station on wow. digital billboards.
It's absolutely, I mean, the colors are spectacular. So let me know, what's the I mean, maybe there is none, but is there a meaning behind it? There's something I should be taking away after looking at that picture?
Well, this one was kind of an assignment. The assignment was to use this phone that they had, just make any artwork with the phone. And you could see in that billboard, those are the ones to the left and right of me are other artists that did the same thing. So there really was no, there weren't many rules on what could be done. I wanted to use this Tigresa persona that I have had. I've taken pictures of myself with this mask that I bought in Mexico about 8 years ago, and I gold leafed it, crystallized it, and then I'm standing in front of a painting, and then went over with Photoshop and digital pen. It's kind of just, I'm really into this idea of auras, and these are kind of using my paintings as a backdrop, but kind of creating this weird middle ground where the painting is consuming me, like a Jumanji vibe.
Yeah. So it's funny, because that's what I saw. I thought I couldn't tell if you were breaking out of the picture or the picture.
Well, that's the idea. Well, the one on the right, I think it's more breaking out, and the other one is being like kind of enveloped by it. But I joke that my work is Jumanji meets South Beach After Hours.
So I like that. Davis,
so it's a little bit of the dirty disco floor mixed in with like foliage. Lois is actually went to this show. This is over at the Deering Estate. I had a residency all year last year, which I still beg them to extend it like 10 more years because it's my absolute favorite studio I've ever had. It's a, what I believe it's 440 acre property, Charles Deering. And we would have, this is the ballroom. So these are two large pieces that are works on canvas, acrylic and chalk pastel. And these are really inspired by the environment there. It's really a gorgeous place. Anybody that hasn't been in Miami, this is perfect for social distancing to go down there. But they have migratory birds and thousands of kinds of butterflies and sharks and manatees. And so these pieces were really inspired by the ocean that surrounds the area. And Charles Deering really had the foresight and was a conservationist. And people come from all over the world to see the animals that are there. So these are inspired by looking at marine life, looking at translucent colors that are on branches and butterflies. So it's kind of mixing a topographical view with, I'm very inspired by underwater life, by scuba diving and snorkeling and all that. I didn't do it there because I saw a couple sharks and that's about it for me. I won't take any chances, but it's kind of combining that with the gorgeous sunsets that you see there. So I really wanted to play it with light and that kind of anthropomorphic feel of these plants taking over, which is a constant theme through the work.
And the pictures are up in the Deering Estate. You're showing them there. Do people go through and can they actually buy the picture, or it becomes part of the Deering Estate, or what are we talking about?
So they don't have any commercial attachment to it. They encourage you to contact the artist, but the works were up there for a while. And they had open studio hours that, you know, they pass your information along, but for the most part, they just want to provide the artist with a place to inspire them for their work. And these pieces, the one on the right was, it's a, ODB from the Wu-Tang Clan. He's from Staten Island. And that was in the New York Times. This was at El Museo del Barrio, which is on Fifth Avenue in New York. Part of the, I believe it was called, it was a mixed media show. So it's gold leaf collage with acrylic and ink. It's a little different from my work because I really haven't done any figurative work in a long time. But this is when I was in school, so like 2012. I do a ton of repurposed vinyl, so music is, as I said, really important in my practice, so he's one of my favorite rappers.
Very cool. Oh.
Oh, more confetti. Yeah, there's the club floor I was telling you about. So I repurposed the floor of my thesis with this piece on the right. This was at Mocha Nomi, this is what the immediacy of life, the eternity of nature. It was inspired by one of my favorite artists. I think I met Lois when I was explaining her work. She's really transformative, and it was about kind of that same feeling that you got in the front. Is it coming out of the floor? Is the floor coming out of it? I wanted to do this, right. Let's bring up Beetlejuice again, a little vortex of coming up out of the ground. But all the work tried to catch is like these two pieces, I would say, like a good, like a mid-explosion feel.
Or the canvas is spilling onto the floor. I don't know which. Mm-hmm. These are beautiful. It's fun to see them in a home setting is kind of cool, too.
Yeah, I got a lot of requests. The problem with this work is that scale is so difficult to tell when you're looking at the work digitally. And this is like a big thing I feel with the pandemic of seeing art in real life versus online is completely different. So these kind of gave examples of the work in a larger environment. Both of these are in private collections, but it's just nice to see, like, I joke that I never get to see them until they leave the studio because my studio walls and floor look like mid-explosion. So when I get to see them out and polished like this in the world, it's like seeing your kids grow up and move away, I guess. I don't know.
It's great. It's great. And they do look beautiful. You see them in a home setting. It just kind of changes the whole vibe of it, which is great.
All of these can have new homes. Contact me today.
You heard her.
These two are more inspired by kind of the before dusk, and I would say like setting things on fire. So the one on the left, I try to keep these kind of cheeky titles that I either get through pop culture, watching TV, or over here. This one's Old Enough to Know the Difference, Young Enough to Never Change, and that's me. I always write this down on my studio walls, just so I can remember most of these things, but a lot of these are direct references of things I'm listening to at the time, or Overheard. I used to love that website, Overheard in New York. I haven't looked at it in a long time. I think they have a Miami one.
Nothing's overheard in New York except virus talk, so I don't think that'd be too bad.
You'd be surprised. There's some pretty good ones. This one on the right is my favorite piece that I've done in the last, I don't know, like 5 years. It's just kind of a nice marriage of this kind of iridescent fog that I try to continue throughout the work with this more cartoony kind of jungle vibe. So this is the piece I'm actually standing in front of in that front piece, that portrait piece, the first piece we started with. So that it's a cropped part of the one on the right.
Okay, very cool.
Yeah, these are, we get into like bedazzling. I'm pretty big on crystals and glitter. I drove my family crazy for a while when it was in their shoes. They came by and they're just like, we won't wear white coming to your studio. There's no clean surfaces.
And you only do large scale, nothing?
No, I have stuff that's like 1 inch by 1 inch. I go from 1 inch to 65 feet. I pretty much have something for every dimension possible. The one on the left here is probably one of the oldest pieces out of everything we've seen, 2011. Yeah, this is a lot of Sharpie and then acrylic, and this is really inspired by Lisa Frank, the Lisa Frank palette of my childhood of bright colors of fluorescent, and then kind of wanted to do this stream of consciousness, almost like if you were doodling while on the phone or something, so repeating these crazy patterns to kind of repeat patterns that are in nature.
Mm-hmm. David, there we go.
Oh, wow, yeah. So like, this is a good example of how you can't really transfer scale. Like the one on the right is about 12 feet tall, but I mean, you're looking at here in an image and it kind of, you couldn't tell the difference in size of these two. So I've photographed a couple people in front of this piece, but that'll be one that's really interesting. If anybody knows a ballroom they want to put that in, hit me up.
12 foot. I could buy that one, but then I'd have to ask the people upstairs. If we
can. Oh, yeah. They'll go in on it.
Very cool.
So I use a ton of, that's the piece that's behind me right now, the You'll Grow Out of It. So I use a ton of old Life and Time magazines. A lot of them I got from Antique Garage Flea Market in Chelsea. I would go there every Saturday. And I really just hoarded up enough magazines to keep working with it. This is a ballerina combined with like an Architectural Digest needlepoint. And then the last piece that we just passed was my most recent one. This one I'm working on now. It looks completely different than that and also glows in the dark. So it has like a double life.
Very cool.
See, I'm sitting in front of the piece in that one, the 12th.
Yeah, I see it. That's very, and that one's not huge. That's like a very, you know, modest size piece of art. Very cool. I love it. The one behind you, I mean. Okay, so.
I want to ask a question.
Go for it, Lois.
You've been dominating this whole little broadcast.
I just fill the vacuum. Yes. If you don't insert anything, I fill. So
Lois, what are you, muted or something?
Yes, I'm muted. It's a different. I'm now the invisible woman. You turn.
Wait. There's a way of muting her, David. You didn't tell me that.
So, you get to a certain age and women become invisible. And Steve has made me invisible. So anyway, what's going on during the virus with all the artists that you know? You are the program director at Fountainhead. You meet a lot of artists every day. You know, what is everybody doing? How are people making money? How are they exposing their art? Is there any innovation going on during this time?
Well, I would say that everybody's different with that. I would say with the pandemic, I've seen a lot of more affordable works being put up, whether that's editions or prints on personal websites and Instagrams, and people doing fundraisers, some fundraisers, and then some just basically a lot of shows are canceled and engagements are canceled. So people's income is in question, especially since the arts are usually the first that are not really economically stable. So between exhibitions being canceled and people not having access to their studios, I've seen a lot of people working smaller, a lot of people putting up works under $1,000. We started Artists Open Online at Fountainhead Residency, kind of peering into what people are up to get access to people that really have no spotlight right now. And that's a problem. But with more people, our digital presence has tripled online because we're literally have a captive audience. People can't go anywhere, so people have to up their digital game, up their website game, and what they're working on. And then there's also things that make a lot of people feel, I don't know, odd about posting anything about themselves because there's bigger things at stake. So I've gotten that too. So people either putting themselves out or people disappearing completely. So I couldn't give any answer but what I'm doing. I continued making work. There was a couple weeks that I didn't have any access to my studio, so I was making smaller works. And also because I was getting more people requesting works, let's say under a price point of under $3,000. And I wanted to, you know, keep producing and basically push those. And that's been a common thread. Like, I've seen a lot of people ask for either smaller works, other artists reaching out to other artists for artist trades. The community has been really interesting in that sense, and that I feel like younger collectors have approached me, feeling that they are more comfortable with buying work.
So, Alex, I mean, so the world of art has now changed, and the virus has changed it. Will we continue to do more digital, or the minute there's a vaccine, we're going to go back to live?
I hope not. I really feel like, I think that slideshow was a great example. You really can't tell what something is unless you're in front of it. You can't see the texture. You can't feel the scale of a work. I think it's been great because I've definitely seen people that I don't usually see put their stuff online, and I get to see what they're up to. But I think it's only kind of like, I don't know, like a trailer. You're not getting the full thing. You get a gist of an idea of what they're up to. I hate online viewing rooms. I think they're garbage and I whatever. But I also think the other extreme of 70 art fairs in different cities all over the world is a bit much. So there is a middle ground. And I think that if anything, this pandemic has given artists more agency and control over their image, in the sense that, like, people are looking directly to them on their social media to see what they're up to. And I don't know, I think it's different for everybody, but I think personally it's caused me to be more aware of how I'm presenting myself. And just, I think people are opening up the accessibility of art, of showing that you can enter on different levels. You don't have to be a blue chip collector, that this work is within your reach.
And how are galleries doing?
I personally, I haven't been to any since before the pandemic. I mean, I follow them online. I follow them on Instagram, but people are going like by appointment. And I think Miami is pretty great for that. I know Catherine led a tour of a couple places. I don't work within the gallery community, so I don't know how it's affected their sales. But I see a lot of people have pushed programming at least till September. I think PAM opens in September. But yeah, a lot of people have delayed either shows till next year or at least fall. Even emails I'm getting that Art Basel's up in the air. So I don't even know if that's happening in December, but I would think it'd be silly to think they could.
Steve, do you have anything to ask?
Well, I want to make a transition because, you know, we couldn't do Lying on the Beach. You can't be an artist without people buying your work. You can't do a podcast without a terrific sponsor. And ours is The Handle Stick. Let me stand in front of here like this. The Handle Stick. Lois is going to do her demonstration. There she goes. This you can attach directly to your phone. You can attach it directly to your case. And it gives you a great way of grasping and holding your phone. So you have hands-free use of your phone. But by setting it up like that kickstand, you can stand it up either vertically or horizontally, which is so important, so that your phone can really do anything you want it to do. Plus, now there's, besides having 40 different styles and colors, they now have a new feature where you can actually take your photo or your business logo or your team or the school you graduated from and put that right here on the handle stick, so you can have it with you always. What an ingenious idea. And the best part about the handle stick, David, what is the best part about the handle stick?
That it's only $10.99.
I think it's $10. I think it starts at $10.
Is it $10? Okay. Wait. Let's do this again so I can go back and edit. So
don't edit.
Are you
don't.
Sure? He won't be upset.
Just
he won't be upset because I said $10.99.
You had a senior moment.
Oh, that's
so
bad.
So, Dave, what's the best part of the handle stick?
That it's only $10.
Oh, it starts at $10. You can't beat that.
No, you can't.
We want more information on the handle stick or see all those designs I talked about, go to handle, H-A-N-D-L, newyork.com, New York spelled out, handlenewyork.com, and check it out. We love the handle stick. Now going back to Alex. Alex,
I have a question for Alex.
Well, I had a quick question.
Alex, is this pandemic going to change people's lives in terms of how the, you know, their taste in art, and will artists all of a sudden like have revelations that they need to do a whole new type of form? You know, they went from abstract to realism to cubism to something else. Are you seeing a lot of changes with attitudes?
I think throughout history, you can't really see those changes until you're outside of them. And I think that everybody's working so completely different. I think that mentally nobody is in the same space as they were when we started. How that will affect the work. I saw somebody posted, and I can't remember who, that it's impossible to continue making the work you were making before this. And whether that's within current events or just reevaluating how we're interacting with people or health-wise. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I think that even within my own work, how I've seen shifts aesthetically, I was not able to see those until I was like 5 years outside of them.
Interesting. Yeah, Steve, we only have 4 minutes left, so ask away.
I was going to ask a little bit about, just real quickly, like in a line or two for the folks at home who don't know, what is Fountainhead? I think some people may not know what it is. It's an amazing project down here in Miami, but for those who aren't aware of it, Alex, give us a line or two on what Fountainhead is.
So Fountainhead encompasses a couple different things. Fountainhead has a residency, which is rotating throughout the year of 3 to 4 artists brought in internationally and nationally. And they work across all mediums, sculptors, performers, photographers. And there's also the other component is Fountainhead Studios, where I have a studio as well, which is in Little Haiti, which provides affordable art space for local Miami artists. And there's around 30 artists that are there right now. We also organize Artists Open Online, which is the only Miami-Dade County-wide open studios, which now took on a virtual realm. And we also do programming development to help artists, whether that be through lecture programming or just events that are around. Lois attended the For the Birds, which was a silent disco that we did. So just community engagement is really important, and it kind of encompasses all realms of the arts.
Alex, so the wrap up question should be, go ahead, what, Steve?
I was gonna just say thank you very much because we really—
No. 1 second. Who is the future Alex? I'm dying to know.
What? How do I even take that on? I don't know.
Does you have any plans that we should know about?
Oh, no, I don't know. You can't plan anything now. Are you kidding? Where am I going? What can I do? What will be open? I have no idea.
I'm planning to walk into the kitchen probably in about 15 minutes. I'm not about that.
Yeah, future Alex is going to have a sandwich.
You've been there about 15 times today.
Absolutely. Okay. I think on that note, and knowing that Lois went to a silent disco, which is, you know, news to everybody now, that's the big breaking news.
Hey, she's a hip lady.
Oh, I know, she's very hip. Thank you very much, Alex. We learned a lot. And of course, you know, this is a piece of art that we've just created. So we've all done that just now. So thank you for helping us with that. Absolutely. And I want to say, I'm Steve. Thank you, Alex. And I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman Hess. And David.
David?
Neves. Neves.
Neves. Let's work on that.
And all four of us, we have been lying on the beach on camera. Thank you very much for joining us, and see you next time. Bye. Thank you, Alex.
Bye. Thank you for having me.